Imagine signing a 20-year lease with a multi-billion dollar, globally recognized fast food empire.
Right. The dream scenario for a lot of investors.
Exactly. You think you are sitting on the safest investment on earth, but then you find out the entity actually guaranteeing your rent is, well, just a guy named Steve who recently filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Yeah, and that exact scenario is actually playing out across Texas retail right now.
It really is. So, welcome to this deep dive into the source material. Today's insights are brought to you by Eureka Business Group.
They are the premier authority and really your dedicated retail navigator for commercial real estate in the Dallas-Fort Worth market.
Exactly. And our mission for this deep dive is highly specific. We have analyzed a stack of over 50 recent commercial real estate stories from late June 2026.
And we are cutting straight through the noise.
We are. We extracted the absolute most critical intelligence specifically for active 1031 exchange investors and high net worth retail investors, and we are keeping a laser focus on the DFW and Texas markets.
Which is absolutely essential right now. When you are managing a strict 1031 exchange timeline, or, you know, allocating high net worth capital, you simply cannot afford to base your underwriting on outdated assumptions.
Right, or just those generalized national headlines.
Exactly. So by distilling these 50 plus stories down, we want to provide you with a clear, data-driven map of where retail real estate in Texas is actually heading.
So in the time we have today, we will uncover why the current interest rate narrative you might be hearing from your broker is, frankly, misleading.
Very misleading, yes.
We will also explore how big box retailers are drastically shifting their physical footprints across Texas. And finally, we will expose the hidden dangers lurking in those seemingly secure fast food leases we just mentioned.
It is a lot of ground to cover, but it is all interconnected.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the macro picture. Before we even look at specific retail properties, we have to understand the cost of capital driving the current market.
Right, because everything flows from the Federal Reserve.
It does. The Federal Open Market Committee recently held the benchmark rate at 3.5 to 3.75%. That was a unanimous 12-0 vote.
But the real story is in the dot plot projections.
Exactly. Those projections turned distinctly hawkish, raising the median 2026 year-end projection up to 3.8%. And I really want to push back on a narrative that is heavily circulating in the market right now.
Oh, I know the one you mean.
Yeah, if you are an investor, you have likely seen marketing materials pushing a very specific message that rate compression is coming soon, so you need to buy now before cap rates drop.
Right, the classic urgency pitch.
But the Fed's actual data strongly contradicts this marketing pitch that compression is imminent.
What's fascinating here is the true market implication of that data divergence. The Fed is clearly telegraphing a higher for longer environment.
Because of persistent inflation concerns.
Exactly. So for the commercial real estate market, you have to look at how this changes the buyer pool. This extended period of elevated rates keeps heavily leveraged buyers effectively sidelined.
Because the cost of their debt simply ruins their pro forma returns.
Right. If your debt costs you 7%, but the property only yields 6%, the deal is dead on arrival.
Makes sense.
But this dynamic actually preserves a massive advantage at the closing table for all cash buyers and 1031 exchange investors. You are not competing against those aggressive, highly leveraged institutional funds right now.
So you have significant negotiating power.
Exactly.
That makes perfect sense. Let us dive a little deeper into the banking side of this equation, though. We know from the recent Federal Reserve stress tests that large banks are well capitalized.
Yes, they are positioned to weather a severe recession.
But when you look at the Fed's HQAT 8 data, it shows that commercial banks still hold over $3 trillion in commercial real estate debt.
That is a staggering number.
It is. So let me play devil's advocate here. If banks are holding $3 trillion in CRE debt, doesn't that make them desperate to unload it, or at least desperate to stop lending altogether?
Well, that is a very logical question, but the reality is more nuanced. Lenders have absolutely not abandoned retail real estate. They have to keep deploying capital to make money.
Right.
But their standards have fundamentally changed. They are still lending, but they now demand what we call stabilized properties.
Meaning properties that are nearly fully leased with reliable cash flow.
Yes. No risky turnaround projects.
Yeah.
They also demand lower leverage points, meaning you have to bring more cash to the table, and they require highly experienced sponsorship.
They want to know you have actually operated retail in Texas before.
Precisely.
So because debt is so expensive and the underwriting is so strict, we are seeing institutional capital flee to the absolute safest retail havens.
Specifically, necessity-based centers.
Right, because when you have expensive debt, you need guaranteed foot traffic. The data shows 85% of institutional retail investors now name grocery-anchored centers as their top preference.
And transaction volumes for that asset class hit roughly $11 billion in 2025.
Which is huge. We actually have a real-world Texas marker for this trend. Coursera Property Company just acquired the Paris Town Center.
Ah, yes.
It is a nearly 300,000-square-foot grocery-anchored site in Northeast Texas. But it is not just massive grocery centers, right?
No, institutional capital is also heavily targeting unanchored convenience retail.
Right, perfectly illustrated by Curbline Properties buying that 5-property JLL portfolio across DFW and Waco.
And alongside this flight to safety, sale-leaseback volumes surged 19% year over year.
I always like to explain sale-leasebacks with a simple analogy. It is essentially like selling your own house and then renting it back from the new owner just so you can use the cash to expand your business.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. Operating companies are monetizing their own dirt to fund their core operations.
Because they know the cash they pull out can generate a 15% return if they invest it into their actual business, while the rent they pay the new owner only costs them 7%.
Exactly. It creates a vital pipeline of new net lease inventory for private buyers looking for reliable yield. But if you are the investor stepping in to buy that asset, you must exercise extreme caution regarding cap rate data.
Oh, absolutely.
You will see reports citing best-in-class grocery-anchored cap rates hovering between 5.25 and 5.8%. As an investor, you must source your benchmark data directly from primary GLL and CBRE reports.
Rather than relying on secondhand brokerage marketing materials.
Yes, because vendors often blend this data to paint the most favorable picture possible for their specific listings. When you are underwriting a multi-tenant acquisition in DFW, relying on a blended metric can severely distort your yield expectations.
So you might think you are buying a 6% return, but the reality of that submarket might dictate a 5% return.
Right. Always verify the primary source data.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. With all of this money pouring into Texas retail centers, the tenants who actually fill those spaces are rapidly evolving their physical strategies.
They have to, just to capture the growth.
Look at Costco's massive DFW expansion. They are approaching 20 locations in the Metroplex, with new openings planned for Salina, Mansfield, and New Braunfels.
And Target is on a very similar trajectory.
Yeah, opening 11 new stores in July alone, including a massive 110,000-square-foot location in Oak Cliff.
Which is its 51st store in DFW. That firmly validates the strong retail demand in southern Dallas.
It really does. But then look at the contrasting footprints of other major players. You have IKEA actually shrinking its format, opening a smaller 93,000-square-foot store in Webster, Texas.
Right, a huge departure for them.
And on the other end of the spectrum, Buc-ee's is expanding massively. They are planning 15 new locations, including a new 74,000-square-foot travel center.
It is a fascinating paradox in the market.
It is. IKEA is shrinking its traditional maze-like destination stores to fit into existing centers, while Buc-ee's is basically building retail cities on highway interchanges.
Well, that paradox perfectly highlights how retailers are segmenting their real estate strategies based on the consumer mission.
What do you mean by that?
IKEA realizes that with omnichannel fulfillment, they no longer need to force every customer through a massive regional warehouse just to buy a lamp. They shrink the footprint and get closer to the suburban consumer.
While Buc-ee's is doing the exact opposite.
Right. Buc-ee's is maximizing dwell time. They want you to stop for gas, buy brisket, and stay for 45 minutes. The physical scale is the attraction.
That makes a lot of sense.
And if we look at the surrounding real estate values, the impact is profound. A new Costco or a new Target does not just fill a vacant box. It fundamentally alters the traffic patterns of the entire trade area.
That is exactly what we are seeing on the ground. When a dominant anchor moves in, it creates a gravitational pull.
It absolutely does.
It drives up the rental rates for all adjacent pad sites and inline shop spaces because every smaller tenant wants a piece of that daily foot traffic.
Precisely. Furthermore, it catalyzes entirely new development. We are seeing this exact dynamic play out with the Seguin Exchange moving forward near San Antonio.
Right, that massive 544-acre development.
Yes, anchored by general merchandise and home improvement stores. For the retail investor, tracking where these highway titans are planting their flags is the most reliable leading indicator for future rent growth.
So you buy the strip center across the street from where Costco is planning to build, not where they have already been for 10 years.
Exactly.
Now, these retailers are shifting their footprint so drastically because the consumer they are chasing is behaving in very complex ways.
Those contradictory ways, really.
Yeah. Let us look at the main numbers. Advanced retail sales rose 0.9% month over month. But when you look at Deloitte's data, you see that headline inflation is seriously hurting the consumer's overall financial confidence.
People are definitely feeling the pinch.
Yet, despite that lack of financial confidence, their intent for discretionary spending has actually rebounded for a second consecutive month. It seems counterintuitive.
They feel poorer, but they intend to spend more.
Right. A lot of this summer spending is being driven by major events like the lead up to the World Cup and America 250 activities.
That is the crucial insight here. Peak consumer financial anxiety is directly fueling high-end experiential retail as people seek escapism.
So they might delay buying a new car, but they will splurge on an unforgettable afternoon.
Yes, and retailers are surviving by leaning heavily into that experience. For example, FAO Schwarz is opening as an interactive store within a store inside Nordstrom.
Oh, wow. And Sephora is introducing low sensory quiet hours for neurodivergent customers, changing the whole environment.
Exactly. Or look at RH, the furniture brand, opening a sprawling experiential gallery in Mayfair that includes restaurants and luxury hospitality.
They are not just selling couches, they are selling a lifestyle environment.
Precisely.
Meanwhile, traditional second-generation space, meaning standard, big-box spaces left empty by bankrupt retailers, is being quickly absorbed by off-price retailers.
Because they cater to the budget-conscious side of that exact same consumer.
Right. For example, Didi's Discounts is backfilling a 30,000-square-foot former Big Lots in Edinburgh, Texas. So what does this all mean for the traditional landlord? Are standard plain vanilla leases becoming a thing of the past?
They absolutely are. Traditional landlords must be prepared for much more complex arrangements moving forward.
Like what, specifically?
Well, the days of simply handing over the keys to an empty box and collecting a static rent check are ending. Landlords must now navigate complex tenant improvement concessions.
Where the landlord pays for part of the specialized build-out.
Right. They must manage intricate licensing agreements and the legal nuances of shop-in-shop setups, like that FAO Schwarz partnership. Who handles liability? Who handles the specific signage rights?
And it is not just the interior build-out either. Retailers are rapidly integrating artificial intelligence to turn their physical stores into seamless digital fulfillment hubs.
Which requires highly flexible store layouts.
Exactly. From a landlord's perspective, you have to ensure there is enhanced back-of-house capacity for inventory sorting, and you have to optimize your parking lots.
The parking lot is no longer just for parking.
Right. It requires dedicated high-flow lanes for continuous curbside pickup.
That is exactly right. The physical store is a critical node in a retailer's omnichannel logistics network now. Landlords who can structure leases that accommodate these logistical needs will secure the best tenants.
And those who insist on rigid, traditional structures will face prolonged vacancies.
Because their buildings simply cannot physically support modern retail operations.
Well, because tenants are demanding these hyper-flexible spaces, legacy structures that cannot adapt are dying rapidly. Which brings us to the red flags.
The distress lurking in the market.
Right. This deep dive wouldn't be complete without examining it. For example, the massive Popeyes franchisee, Sailor Men Inc., recently entered Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Yeah, they moved to reject up to 52 store leases.
And a federal judge just allowed 18 of those rejections to proceed immediately. Elsewhere, West Marine is closing 59 stores in bankruptcy.
It is a significant shakeup.
And then you have the Exton Square Mall closing its interior after 53 years of operation. That property is facing massive zoning and infrastructure disputes.
That is a classic cautionary tale.
Looking at that Popeyes situation, it brings up a crucial point for single-tenant net lease properties. Assuming a national brand guarantees your rent just because their logo is on the building is exactly like assuming the guy driving a Ferrari actually owns it.
That is a phenomenal analogy.
The credit is only as good as the specific franchisee who signed the paperwork.
If we connect this to the bigger picture of distressed assets, we have to look closely at those mall graveyards. There is a strong temptation among value-add investors to buy distressed, enclosed malls purely for the underlying land value.
Because they look at 50 acres in a good suburb and assume they can easily bulldoze it.
Right, and build a thriving mixed-use development. But the Exton Square Mall situation proves why this strategy is incredibly dangerous.
Because you aren't really buying real estate, you are buying a legal battlefield. You have to underwrite the politics and the legal contracts just as much as the concrete.
Precisely. These legacy properties are entangled in complex reciprocal easement agreements. In plain English, an REA dictates exactly how the parking lots, common areas, and building exteriors can be used.
So you cannot just bulldoze a parking lot if Macy's has a legal right to it.
Exactly. Furthermore, they are bound by strict co-tenancy clauses. If an anchor leaves, smaller tenants have the legal right to break their leases or demand massive rent cuts.
And then you face the entitlement disputes with local municipalities,
who might not want high-density apartments where a mall used to be. The carrying costs of holding a massive empty structure while you fight a 5-year zoning battle can quickly erase any projected returns.
So what looks like a brilliant value-add redevelopment on a spreadsheet turns into a multi-year legal nightmare in reality?
Almost always, yes.
Well, that brings us to the end of our analysis for this week. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the source material.
This was a great discussion.
We want to reiterate that Eureka Business Group is your dedicated retail navigator for the Dallas-Fort Worth market.
Whether you are navigating a strict N31 exchange timeline or deploying high net worth capital, we are ready to help.
Exactly. Ready to help you leverage these exact insights to protect your downside and maximize your yield in Texas.
I will leave you with a final thought to ponder as you evaluate your retail portfolios moving forward, though.
Let's hear it.
We noted that Amazon is aggressively shifting its massive Prime Day event into June, specifically to pull consumer discretionary sales forward. At the exact same time, retailers are integrating AI to turn their physical locations into robust omnichannel fulfillment hubs.
Right.
So as this continues, will the very definition of rentable square footage change in the future?
That is a fascinating question.
If a retail store functions more as a digital broadcast studio for influencers and a localized distribution center for online orders, how will landlords accurately calculate percentage rent 5 years from now?
Because the transaction happens on a smartphone in a customer's living room, but the product is fulfilled from the back room of your retail center.
Exactly. Defining where that sale actually occurred will be the next great challenge in retail commercial leasing.